for the homies still stuck on the grind. I got love for the haters who done lost their mind. I got love for the earth, the waters of rebirth. I got love for the fire in my heart when it hurts. I got love for my people, the poet in the streets. I got love for the brother in the cup making beats. I got love for the dancer, the dreamer, the son. I got love for the killer who gives up his gun.
Welcome to the Street Poets Podcast. For 25 years, Street Poets has been building community one rhyme at a time. We share our stories because they connect us to each other and remind us that we're all in this life together. Each episode, we'll bring one of those stories to you. We hope, as you listen, you'll hear some reflection of your own story, of the American story, of the greater human story. I'm your host, Art Kiros. And this is True Nature, the David Sanchez story. In this episode, veteran street poet David Sanchez remembers his journey from the wilds of South Central LA and Central Juvenile Hall to the wilderness of the Rocky Mountains and the California backcountry. As the founder of Seed and Soul Organic Gardening, David stands today as a living testament to the transformational power of poetry and the natural world. We hope his story serves to remind you of your own true nature.
Is it the color of my skin or the way that I talk? Is it the way that I dress or the way that I walk? The pain in your heart, that's where the healing starts. We're so caught up in this madness, it's breaking us apart. All the way from El Pueblo, chasing better days. My people in the struggle, trying to find better ways. Nowadays, the youth listen to that fantasy rap. Brainwashed America is feeding us trash to protect and serve, but don't include the poor. They don't like the way we live, so they shut the door. Breaking families apart, what kind of move is that? So many years in poverty, I couldn't live like that. I remember being 8 and watching dad smoke crack. Parents fighting in the kitchen, I could hear the slaps. Now I'm all grown up, and the past is a memory. Breaking negative cycles, till the day that they bury me. My ancestors' blood runs deep through my veins, with the legacy of medicine that still remains.
My earliest memories started in the east side of South Central LA. That's where my parents immigrated to. We never really had a stable home, so we were always bouncing from place to place, from house to house. It was always like from 33rd Street to 56th Street to Central and 42nd. I grew up with the black folks and the Mexican folks, and I didn't speak English up until I was, like third grade. The neighborhood that I come from, There's a lot of gangs in that neighborhood, you know, different gangs. And I grew up as a kid watching, you know, like violence, but it felt normal. My dad was really a hardworking man up until he started using heroin, crack, and he kind of felt deep in it.
When I was a kid, I'd push you in the shopping cart to go get your fix. Your body begged for it. But you get sick. How many times did I die watching you get high? I tried to hate you, but love never lies. Mama became the enemy, keeping you away from me. But it didn't matter to me. I was determined just to see. Remember that time I was 7 years old? You left me in the alley out in the cold. I waited for hours, but you never came back. Until an officer found me and took me back to the pad. Even then, I still loved you. I just figured you forgot. But when it happened again, my heart started to rot. Remember that time? I saw you get jumped. They punched you and kicked you, left you covered with lumps. Maybe that's the reason why I always hit first. It killed me inside to see you get hurt. When I was in elementary school, you never came through. On parent career day, I didn't know what to do. I lied to my friends. Say you were a firefighter, but the real fire burned in my soul like your lighter. I carried that flame until the day finally came when you left us behind with nothing but your name. A single mother, 4 kids, then I was the elder, there to clean up your mess and help pay for our shelter.
My pops and my moms, they started having a lot of problems financial problems, relationship problems. My mom grew tired of my father's addiction because it wasn't getting better. And I remember during that time, we didn't really have no support. My mama had to work two jobs, and I had to take my little brothers to school in the morning, and I had to bring them home. And so we were unsupervised for long hours every day. From the time I was like 8, 9, my mom used to just be like, hey, no le abras la puerta a nadie. Like, don't open the door for nobody if they come knocking. And we used to barricade ourselves in our one-bedroom apartment.
Where was God when my pops went away for good? I felt I didn't have a choice but to live in the hood. Ghetto stars, fancy cars, caught the corner of my eye. The way that I was living had me asking him why. Why do I need to go around stealing to eat? I hope that when I die it happens deep in my sleep. Where was God when Aaron got shot 2 blocks away from his house and my boy got dropped, his heart stopped? I never understood why the good die young. Cold nights, blood, tears had me sipping on rum. I couldn't live with the pain, so I started popping back like the rappers nowadays. I was falling off track. Where was God when the cops came to darken my day? If being brown is a sin, then y'all can take me away. I lost a lot of people and never blamed it on the streets. Have you ever thought about what makes this cycle repeat?
The first time I made any police contact, I was in fifth grade. I pulled this knife out on this kid. And I showed it to him and I told him I was going to hurt him with it. He told a teacher. Teacher approached me. I told him, yeah, I have this knife in my backpack. They took me to the dean's office, and then what happened was they called the police. The police came, and the parents of that kid were pressing for me to be arrested and to charge me with a felony. I remember that lady said something like, this kid is going to be a criminal when he grows up, and he's on a path of destruction. And I kind of like believed it in my head, you know, because I still remember her words to this day. I'm 30 now.
Where I'm from, crack pipes decide for lost souls. We all feed off the same bowl. Kids take on father roles. Hunger leads to robbery because the lottery's not promised. I once tried to kill a man. I'm that honest. That honest. That honest. That honest. That honest. Where I'm from, everybody sins. Justice doesn't exist. I'm 9 numbers on a county list. I think about it and it gets me pissed. My little sister tried to cut her wrist. Where I'm from, fear floats in the air. War is declared because the laws are unfair. Murder isn't rare and nightmares play it all over again. Weed is the only medicine. Where I'm from, hearts get colder by the day. As mothers pray, x-rays can't see the pain I hold. But there's no insurance anyway for a broken soul. Broken soul. Where I'm from, good food is more expensive than gold. I'm enrolled in a life I feel I didn't choose. I tried, it's nothing but a cheap excuse. But I refuse to lose myself in this mire. Where I'm from, street poetry and music inspire. Stories expressed through rhymes, lines that explain hard times. I seek peace in strange places, circles that unite races. Candles burn and sage smoke floats over rocks that bring faith to broken hearts. As old pain gets washed away, where I'm from, we'll be different someday.
Someday.
Different someday. Where I'm from, someday. Where I'm from, someday.
The first time that I fired a gun, I felt protected. That's the number one thing. I still had to watch my back walking down the street, but I felt like I had something to defend myself with. And I remember the first time I fired a gun, I was scared. My legs were shaking. My arms were shaking. My heart was pounding. It's like every emotion that you could think of was running through my body. But outside, I had to be strong and pretend like I wasn't scared. My relationship with firearms led me to do other things that were more serious, and then I ended up in jail. I remember when they were like, oh, you're getting 25 to life. When they said that and I was 14 years old, I'm going to tell you this. I don't care. You could be the hardest gangbanger in the world. You could be, you know what I mean? You could be Al Capone's little brother. You can be whatever you want to be. But when you hear them 25 to life, man, it's like at that moment, nothing's worth it. I just broke down and I was like, damn, I just threw my life away.
But the judge decided not to follow the prosecutor's recommendation to try David as an adult. Instead, he offered him a second chance in the juvenile system, but only if he agreed to plead guilty to attempted murder and serve 2 years in juvenile detention camp, minus the 7 months he'd already spent behind bars fighting his case.
When I went to Camp Fred Miller, I'm in the bottom bunk. My bunkie, he happens to be from a rival gang. And so I didn't talk to him, but everybody else in the dorm, they had already told me, like, hey, that's your enemigo, you know, that's your enemy, man. And so I knew I was going to have to fight this fool eventually. At the time, I was just keeping a cool. I was kind of trying to feel him, you know. I was just trying to see what's up. You know, I just landed. So I'm keeping a journal. And sometimes he would peek over and, like, look at what I was writing. And I knew he kept a journal, too. He had a journal. I remember they used to call him every Wednesday or Thursday to go to this poetry and writing workshop with the street poets. And one time, he looks over the bunk and he's like, hey, homie. He's like, hey, what you writing, fool? And I look up and I'm like, what you mean? And he's like, oh, I see you always writing, dog. You should come to the poetry, you should come to the writing workshop and see what's up. Check it out. And in my head, I'm like, oh, this fool wanna fight. I'm like, oh, he probably trying to lure me in. He's trying to lure me into this poetry workshop. Cause there's a way that we could fight, you know? So I'm like, oh yeah, don't even trip, dog. I'm gonna sign up. I'll see you over there next Thursday or next Wednesday. He's like, all right, bro, I'll see you right there. I signed up, and man, for like 3-4 days, you know, Mario's a big dude, man. He's strong, and I had seen him fight before, too. So I was just like, oh, man, I'm going to have to fight this fool. So I'm thinking about it for like 3-4 days. I'm like, all right, I'm getting ready, you know, trying to do my little push-ups. And I pull up to the poetry workshop, and for the first time, I met Mirza and Irie, two veteran street poets. We did the writing workshop. And the homie, he wasn't tripping. He didn't even say nothing about fighting. He didn't say nothing about anything. In my head, I'm like, I didn't know if to trust him or if to trust what was going on. But I knew that day that I liked what happened in that room. I was just like, damn. Like, this is tight. Like, I want to keep doing this, you know? I want to keep coming back. There was other guys who could really write. And I would listen to their poetry, and they would talk about their struggle, you know, about the stuff that they were going through at home, the stuff that they were going through here. And I was just like, damn, like, I want to be able to write like that and make people feel like how this guy's making me feel right now. And that was my introduction to writing and poetry. I just felt like I had a voice for the first time, and I was being seen by people who didn't even know me.
If you knew me, you would know. My father was a heroin addict until liquor took its place. He used to come home late and diss me in my face. My mother worked long hours to support his habit until one day she had it and booted him out. My role model was gone and all I knew was his route. I started smoking and drinking. Shot my first gun without thinking. Banging on city walls all the way to juvenile hall. Then I saw my first body drop. My heart stopped his original beat. Fear replaced by heat turned me into a numb human. For a while, I couldn't cry. My feelings died, only to be revived in jail. Life without bail, but they left out a nail in my concrete coffin. My little brothers often saw me as their pops, cause I was all they knew. Soon enough, they started drinking brew and smoking marijuana too. I cried in my cell every night before I went to sleep. In this wicked world, I was in too deep, dealing with my old demons. I questioned my old reasons for living and started forgiving myself for what I felt. Change came in waves, I found a way to write and read to help my heart maintain. I saw my mother cry and bleed, so I wanted to express that pain. My spirit was set free when I wrote my first poem. I know you can hear me, now I can see clearly. Pen in my hand demanding the truth from what lies buried in my youth.
As I grew into a veteran in the class, I was getting closer to getting released. Christopher Henriksen, also Irie, came and they told me that they had met some people in Colorado. There was this boarding school and they kind of just planted the seed. You know, they were like, hey, what do you think about going to a different state and maybe finishing school somewhere else away from your community? Because right now your community is not the safest place for you. It sounds like from what you're telling us and just from knowing you, it was already like, you know, brotherhood, man, we're brothers already. So I was like, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll see what's up. You know, I'll try it out. My probation officer at the time, Mr. Bates, he saw it as a really good opportunity too. I remember going to school and Mr. Bates pulling me to the side and be like, David, man, I got your good news, man. You got approved, but this is the only thing, man. He's like, so they're going to let you fly to the school. I'm going to drop you off at the airport. And I remember him dropping me off and sitting down and right there at the terminal, right, with a newspaper and just making sure that I got on the plane. And he was like, if you run away, dude, that's my job. And so a part of me was also really, really grateful for that. And I was just like, you know, I'm not going to run away. Like in my head, I was like, it's not worth it. I got a couple months left and it's not how I want to go out. I think at that point I was more mature. It was my first time being on a plane. So when I landed in Colorado and I stepped out and there was no probation officers, there was nobody waiting for me on the other side, I was just like, damn, I'm free again. I was like, I felt free. I was like, I could just run away. But nah, man, I waited for the people to come pick me up to drive me to the school, which was about like a 2-hour drive from the airport. Up onto the Rocky Mountains, Estes Park, I visited the school and I was just blown away. It was just different. Everything was different. The environment was different. The people were different, coming from like all 50 states. It felt good. The opportunity felt good. So it was just a yes, yes, yes. You know, I was just like, yes, I want to be a part of this. Like, yes, I want to come back. Like, yes, I want to give it a shot. They flew me back, picked me up. Dropped me off at the juvenile hall at the camp, I should say. And then at camp, it's like I finished my time. And when I finished my time, I went back to the city for like a month. I stayed with my mom. And it was like a time of preparation with my street poet family. They were just making sure that I had what I needed. They bought me some clothes, stuff like that. You know, my ticket. They were just explaining to me like the good things that come with it and just the whole rundown. So it was just like a month of that. And then after that, I ended up going back to the school. The environment was 1,000 times different than what your public school looks like. It was actually house-based, house-structured. It was like living in a dorm, like a college dorm. But there were 6 of them, 7 of them. The guys are upstairs and the ladies are downstairs. And you have a house parent, usually a couple who, like an older couple who are also teachers. And so when I went to Eagle Rock School, my house parent was Jesse Tovar and his wife Natalie, and they had a little kid. They were really, really good house parents. And my challenges up there was just, I still had a little bit of that juvenile hall in me, that old habits in me. You know, I wanted to smoke weed up there, and that was hard. Also, not to drink. I remember pounding my first 40-ounce Budweiser when I was, 9? That was like a lot of beer, you know, for a 9-year-old. And then after that, you know, I started drinking more, but I didn't think it was a problem until I got older. Those were some of the issues that I faced up there. Also, there was these non-negotiables, like things that you could never break, never do at the school. Like, you know, like have sex, drink, smoke, steal, whatever else you're not supposed to do. And I broke every single one of those up there. I made poor decisions too. Don't think it was just like, oh, I went up there and I graduated and it was like the best time of my life. Nah, it wasn't actually. It was the best time of my life, yes. But hard lessons came with that because I was being sneaky still. And people were not cool with that. No matter how cool I was, they were just not cool with that. Like me breaking the rules and getting away with it. Because that opened the door for other students that really looked up to me for them to do the same thing. And so I had to learn the hard way and get sent home. I got sent home twice and I begged them to let me come back. The second time, man, it just felt like it was over. Public school didn't work for me. This private school didn't work for me. LAUSD don't even want me in the schools. I'm like, man, I might as well start picking up cans. And it felt that way, you know, but I started owning up to my shit, man. That's really what happened. I started saying, you know what? I fucked up, man, or I messed up. And this is, yes, I did do this. Yes, this is what happened. I stopped denying stuff, you know? That was like the most man shit I could do at the time, was own up to it, you know? Like, stop saying it wasn't you, man. Stop coming from that place of fear and, like, lying. Eagle Rock taught me that. They showed me that, those lessons. Stop dodging the bullet, you know? Just get hit, man, and go through that pain and see what it feels like. And a heal from that, you know, that's what happened. That was like the best, that's how I could describe it, the best I could describe it. I say, yes, I did do this. I apologize. You know, I'm not going to do that again. I want to graduate. And when I came back the second time, I came back with a vengeance, man. I was on it too. I was able to graduate from Eagle Rock School Professional and Development Center with a scholarship. And I found my love for nature out there. I saw snow for the first time, wildlife, deer. I went camping. They exposed me to different states. You know, I went to North Carolina, New Mexico, Utah. I went to different places that I had never been to. It was new. It was different. It was good for me. Robert Burkhart, who is one of the founders of Eagle Rock School, he was also one of the founders of the California Conservation Corps Backcountry Trails Program. It's like being in the Army, but then you have like the Navy SEALs, you know, like a more elite group. It's one of those programs where thousands of people apply for it every year and only 150 people get chosen to go in the wilderness for 9 months, clear trails, live out your backpack, carry all your tools. He was like, you know what, David, before you go straight to college, you might want to take a look at other options too, so you can have time to think about what you really want to do. I was having dinner at Eagle Rock and he tapped my shoulder and was like, hey, David, I just want to tell you, I have good news for you. If you're really serious about going into the program, I just want to extend out this invitation for you. And I was just, man, I was jumping with joy, man. I was excited. I was like, oh, hell yeah. I was telling everybody in the lunchroom, hey, man, I got accepted. It was like being accepted to college. To me, it was like the next big thing for me in my life. And I was going to get paid too. Not a lot, but it was like a $800, $900 monthly stipend. But since you're in the wilderness, there's no stores back there. So it just piles up until you come out 9 months later. And they cover everything, you know, including housing, which is, you know, the wilderness itself. So I went to the Backcountry Trails program right after I graduated from Eagle Rock School. And that's when I discovered my true passion for just nature. You know, it was the first time I had a six-pack my whole life out there working out and, you know, carrying all those tools, hiking. We were like 80 miles in the wilderness. It was insane. The closest store was probably like 2-3 days walk. I got to see some of the best views that California could offer. Some of the best hot springs, some of the best rivers, some of the best trails that hadn't been hiked on for like 15 years. I had the honor to clear those trails. And I felt the strongest back there. It was the first time also that I went sober for almost a year. And then when I got out, I didn't smoke and I didn't drink. And I was just like, whoa, like this is what it feels like to just be human.
Yo, I've been on the run, looking for my spirit. My scars are bone deep, not too many wanna hear it. Bring the pain to the surface and let the fire burn. This is my initiation to return. I still have a lot to learn. Every night before I sleep, all I ask is that I breathe another day. I'm the narrator to the play. I'm battling inside and I'm drinking all my demons, consuming all the guilt until I forget the reasons. I refuse to be a slave to the streets. I ain't trying to go away for another man's beef. It's just me against the world until there is nothing else. Lost souls wearing Gucci, fascinated by the wealth. Corporations taking over, leaving people unemployed. This is World War III, my soldiers ready to deploy. Revolutionary rap, we're invading every city, from LA to New York, and this for anybody with me. Yo,
I've been running
for a very long time. Caught up in my feelings, man, I'm caught up in the grind.
I've been running,
running for my life. I kicked a lot of dirt, now I'm paying for the price.
After I came back to the city, my hair was wild. You know, I felt like I could run for like miles and miles and miles without stopping. I felt pure, like really, really in my body, man. Like I felt like a newborn baby had been dropped off in a chaos in the middle of the city. And I knew I needed to do something to keep myself not only busy, but also in touch with what I had just experienced, with the nature. But I didn't know what it was until, again, and that's why I feel like it's very important for youth to have mentors in their lives. And mentors could be different. It don't gotta be one. It could be like different people in your life that come in to teach you something or to show you something. Well, my mentor came at me and said, hey, so I have this gardening guy who does my vegetable garden. You know, he's looking for a worker. I was like, yeah, man, I don't know nothing about gardening at all. You know, and I'm thinking that I'm going to be like blowing and mowing and cutting trees and that kind of stuff, you know. I didn't know anything really about any gardening. A few days later, yeah, he's like, hey, yeah, he'd like to meet you, check him out. I think I was supposed to meet him at the farmer's market in Santa Monica. And for the first time, I met with him and it was about growing vegetables and planting fruit trees and maintaining vegetable gardens. I started at $7 an hour and it was really my first job. Since I could speak English and I could speak Spanish and his main guy, he could only speak Spanish, I would translate and communicate, and they had me as a driver. And so I would drive to these different gardens, and we were doing celebrity gardens. I really liked it. I enjoyed it. That's why I still garden today. You know, I have a business today. But I was going to rich people's homes, planting the vegetable gardens, doing it as a job, because not only did I needed the money, but, you know, I was enjoying it. But I also wanted the same thing. I wanted to have a garden just like they did. I wanted to make it more accessible to lower income communities like the one I grew up in. And so I really took it serious. I started learning how to build raised garden beds. It was almost like he was from the future because he taught me all this stuff. And the guy, his main guy, was teaching me all this stuff about vegetable gardening, about seeding, about growing, about fertilizing the sick plants. They were teaching me all this stuff that I didn't know later on in life. Like today, it was worth the $7 an hour. You know, I feel like I was getting paid $100 an hour with the knowledge that I know now about gardening. I thank that man for teaching me that stuff, because now I'm able to feed my family with those same skills that he taught me. You know, and I branched out and I found my passion, like what I really wanted to do for the rest of my life.
David's gardening business, Seed and Soul, installs and maintains organic vegetable gardens in private homes, schools, and community sites throughout the Los Angeles area. From his old South Central neighborhood to his current home in Echo Park to Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, and beyond.
With poetry, I felt seen. I felt like I had a voice. And in the garden, I feel like I'm at home and I feel at peace. It doesn't feel like a job to me. The garden, you could chop a leaf, you could chop a leg, you could chop whatever, but as long as the roots are still there, it's always going to keep growing. And it's just like us. You could chop one of our legs off or something. Some of the homies get shot. And all the homies go through things that, man, that you can't even think of. But as long as you're true and you hold on to your roots and you go back to your roots and you think about ways to grow and you feed it medicine, it keeps you alive. Now, I'm in the process of building myself. I'm in the process of not only learning more, but using the tools that I've learned as a kid throughout my life, from gang days to Eagle Rock days, my going to the backcountry days, and just taking a little bit out of every episode, every chapter, and applying them to my life today. You know, I'm 30 now. I have kids. I have a beautiful little boy, two beautiful little girls, and I have an older son. And I feel good that I have a family, that we're healthy, that I have a home. I feel blessed to be free. I feel very privileged. The experiences that I have faced and the things that I have been through throughout my life have really molded me into the man that I am today. And I'm not perfect. A lot of things have happened. And I'm learning every day. But I know that I'm a better human now than I was yesterday.
Grains of hope still remain. Memories invade my brain. When I seek peace, I'm knee deep in this system, like quicksand forcing me back to the darkness. But I won't fall in the same mud I did before. I'll walk on a different road, through a different door, wanting more and more change to come. Like people that loved me and kept me going, flowing without me knowing. I pour my story out like water for the thirsty. My heart screams peace with each rhyme I release. The wind and trees, the birds and bees come together for this ritual, making the disconnected reconnect. Like war vets with their souls becoming whole in this cold world. Warmed by my daughter's hugs, my dirty chucks, there are still grains of hope. Even when your daddy's smoking dope, looking at life through a microscope. I welcome you to this show, where love floats and hearts know they can finally be safe. Away from that beehive of lies, guns and knives. This space is called freedom. My ego died because I couldn't feed him. I'm a newborn with a new spirit, a greater mission, the real me.
I have a 17-year-old stepson. And he's always looked up to me and has always came to me. And it's a trip because what would I say to a 14-year-old me is the same thing that I say to the 17-year-old son that I have at home. I always tell him to don't be afraid to ask for help, that good people do exist, that there's good people out there, that sometimes those good people are not going to be your family. They're going to help you. It's going to be other people you don't even know that are going to impact their life the most. And another thing that I always tell them is to take advantage of the opportunities that the universe presents you with, because they only come once in a lifetime. You might think you're always going to be full of opportunities, but that's not true. I think that opportunities are meant to go around, but you're not meant to keep an opportunity. You're meant to share your opportunity and spin it around. As soon as you take advantage of it and you learn everything you need to learn from that opportunity, I feel like it's your job to give that same opportunity to somebody else.
We still stuck on the grind. I got love for the haters who done lost their mind. I got love for the earth, the waters of a birth. I got love for the fire in my heart when it hurts. I got love for my people, the poet in the streets. I got love for the sister in the cut making beats. I got love for the rhymers, the rappers, the one. I got love for the mamas who rise with the sun. With the sun, with the sun, with the sun.
Hear more episodes like this by subscribing to Street Poets Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. Metaphors be with you.